It's Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield and Adam Hill on ESPN Las Vegas.
Mariani awaiting the punt from Marquette King. This is a good punt. It's a little too good. All the way through the end zone, a 72-yard punt.
Brett Kern, I'll see your 62-yarder hit you a 72-yarder.
Wow. That's a career long for King.
Watch this punter, Marquette King. He's known to do dances after he punts.
Ooh, maybe we should have known with that comment by John Gruden. That was John Gruden. No, it wasn't John Gruden. Who was that? It sounded like John Gruden, but you're telling me it's CBS credits. I don't know. Sounded like Gruden. She has no idea.
It sounded like Gruden to me.
It did, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go with ESPN credit. So ESPN credit. All right. So, weird segue. We were just talking about two of our local stars, sort of. Local. Conor McGregor with the UFC and Floyd Mayweather, right? And Floyd is a local. He's a Las Vegan. And it's interesting, because I've tied them together. I think they're the same character away from the ring and the cage. They've got discipline issues, and they get amped up when their dudes are around them and get crazy, right? So Dana White already started defending Conor McGregor, so we know what's happening. He's coming back and fighting. He was disgusted one day, and then the next day, he's throwing out lines like, what Conor did, really not a big deal, because they do a lot worse in other sports, I guess like the NFL. Jim Trotter follows all sports. He follows the NFL. I wonder what his reaction is here on this Tuesday. Jim, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good. We're good. I assume you keep an eye on what goes on with MMA and this guy Conor McGregor. You saw what happened last week with the bus attack?
Absolutely.
What's your take when people in the fight game are like, no big deal, the other sports are worse than we are?
Deflection. I mean, that's all it is, deflection and distraction. So I would ask Dana, what are we talking about here? And look, the UFC has its issues just like every sport has its issues, just like society has its issues. So whenever you start bringing other people into your mess, all it is a way to distract and deflect.
Yep. And, you know, it's funny, Adam and I have covered, because it was our local pro sport for the longest time, major league sport for the longest time. Now we've got the NHL and the NFL coming eventually. But we always said, wait until these guys start making money. Wait until management has to deal with, you know, pay issues, because it will make them like other sports, and there are going to be discipline issues as well.
It's society. You can go in any walk of life, and you're going to find discipline issues. So that's why I always... You know, I always remind people sports is simply a microcosm of society, and anytime you try and hold up a light to one sport, you're doing a disservice, because you can hold up that light to any part of society and you will find issues and problems. So I don't know why Dana felt – well, I do know why Dana felt the need to bring in other sports.
Money man.
Mention other sports.
Yeah, it's money,
but,
man.
You know, exactly.
You know, company bought him for anyway. $4.2 billion. They need Conor McGregor around to make him money.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's get into the aforementioned John Gruden, because you talked to Marquette King, and we'll get into the Marquette King side of things, but what have you found out from the Raiders side? What exactly was the reason to dump Marquette King?
Well, you know, it's multi-layered. It wasn't just one issue, but at the forefront of it, first and foremost, you have to look at his salary. I mean, $2.4 million for a punter is an awful lot of money. And from their standpoint, they may have felt that they could get more bang for the buck elsewhere. Secondly, you know, Marquette has a lot of personality, and for some coaches, that might not sit well. And I think that there was some of that at play here as well. And not just from John Gruden's standpoint, but maybe from an organizational standpoint where, you know, you have organizations to feel kickers and punters should basically be seen and not heard, and Marquette has a big personality, and he has a social media presence and all those different things. So I think when you start combining all of those elements, it sort of led to this. Now, was it handled a little bit clumsily? Yes, and that's unfortunate.
Now, Marshawn Lynch may not be a social media guy, but he certainly has a presence. The difference between the two, simply the position and the value of the position?
Oh, without question. Look, you know, I'm a Hall of Fame voter. We've had one punter in the Hall of Fame in the history of you know, Canton. So there are people who believe that specialists aren't really football players,
right,
quote unquote,
right,
and that's why they don't get as much benefit of the doubt or as much leeway as people at other positions might get. And there's definitely some of that at play here, without question.
So you talked to Marquette King. Let's set the scene here. First of all, I got a kick out of the fact that he was watching Narcos.
Yeah, that week he had been binge watching, you know, the final episodes of Narcos, and you know, he had come to Oakland, I believe it was on Thursday night, the night before he was, you know, going to meet with Gruden or wanted to meet with Gruden and the staff. But he had flown in from Phoenix where, you know, he was working out, and he was coming in to shoot a promotional type feature with NBA TV with Andre Iguodala, and he was going to teach Iguodala how to punt, basically. And so he's at a friend's place, and all of a sudden they start talking about Narcos and those final episodes, and Marquette was just kind of like, man, you know, it's just crazy how one minute you can have everything and the next is taken from you. And little did he know, less than 24 hours later, he would walk into the Raiders facility and find out that it was all being taken away from him at that moment, everything he had known as a professional football player.
What's your sense of what's going on in the Raiders organization? Because I feel like we're headed towards some sort of butting of heads between Reggie McKenzie and Gruden. Maybe it's already happened, because you also pointed out, you know, McKenzie's the one who has to call up Marquette King and say, you know, you're done.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Marquette said he's never met John Gruden, so perhaps that's why Reggie was the one who did it. Some coaches like to bring players in and inform them that they've been cut, and typically that'll happen when you're in camp or during the season, and other coaches don't want anything to do with that, and the front office handles it. So I'm not sure where Gruden falls in that, you know, in that line of thinking. We'll find out going forward. But in this case, you know, clearly the decision had been made. The coaching staff was not in the building, as I understand, or they were not available that day because they had just had the owners' meetings and whatnot. And so Marquette had come in, and what was funny to me is that he sort of wanted to make a good impression. He didn't want to come in empty-handed, so he stopped at the grocery store before heading in, and he buys a box of Snickers for Gruden, because, you know, he's heard so much about how Gruden's so intense, and he buys a bottle of limoncello for Rich Bisaccia, their special teams coach, because he says Bisaccia is Italian, and Italians typically like limoncello, I guess, which I don't know if that's true or not.
That's very stereotypical.
So anyway, he walks in a Safeway bag with both of those things for those two, and neither one of them are there, so he winds up leaving. And when he leaves, he gets a message that Reggie McKenzie was looking for him. And so anyway, he calls Reggie, and Reggie doesn't answer, so he leaves a message, and then he goes out to breakfast with a buddy. And no sooner does he put the butter on the French toast and the syrup on, than the phone rings, and it's Reggie, and he steps outside to take the call, and Reggie kind of informed him what was going on, and that's really how he found out. And then you go through that sort of shock phase where everything is surreal, and it takes you a moment to really grasp exactly what's happened.
Jim, what happened to the Snickers?
Couldn't tell you. I didn't ask him.
You are an idiot. That's your most important follow-up question, is the Snickers?
Yeah.
I can't tell you Gruden didn't get any Snickers because he wasn't there.
Oh, that'd be cool. I mean, I would just eat the Snickers. I think I feel like you're kind of sad, you're cut, going to down
them. Binge.
And that's what I would do. I think one of the interesting things I took out of your story, besides I actually was fascinated, I did want to know what happened to the Snickers, was, you know, he said in your story that, hey, if a team wants to call me in and say, you know, eliminate the antics, I can act like a zombie if you want me to. Nobody ever said anything. So did he say on the, you know, when he starts looking for a new job, did any other team say anything to him about his antics or how they wanted him to behave?
Sure, it was brought up. I mean, you know, no team wants its punter taking unsportsmanlike penalties, without question. And again, most teams, most organizations don't want their punters or any player creating any sort of controversy on social media. The thing with Marquette is that a lot of things, at least publicly, that he's done could be construed as harmless. But football being the culture, having the culture that it has, many of those things are not considered harmless to coaches or whoever. So from Marquette's standpoint, there's no question that the Broncos brought up, you know, the unsportsmanlike penalties and how, you know, those things aren't acceptable. But what they did say to him, too, and what he has said is that they said they want him and the players to have fun. They want them to be able to be themselves. Now, what does that mean? We're going to find out going forward, but at least he's under the impression that he will get to be Marquette in terms of, you know, having some personality and having fun.
What are you hearing? We're talking to Jim Trotter from NFL Network. What are you hearing on the, I was going to call it the Manziel Derby, which sounds ridiculous because I didn't think anyone would have interest in Johnny Manziel, but clearly people do. There's been a ton of scouts around Johnny in three different scenarios, right?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say they've been around him specifically looking at him. He was throwing at two separate pro days where scouts are going to be there to look at the players who are draft eligible. So, you know, only those scouts can say how many of them really were paying close attention to Johnny. The thing about Johnny, there's no question that there is some interest because, look, it's a quarterback-driven league and there are too few good quarterbacks. But there's a lot of ground to be covered before we ever get to the point that Johnny Manziel's back in the NFL. And there is still a discipline issue out there, you know, in terms of domestic violence allegation, in terms of possible drug use, all of those things. So my guess is, and again, this is just a guess at this point, not having researched it further with people because we're not at that point, but my guess is before Johnny Manziel ever comes back to the NFL, there's going to be a suspension involved that he would have to serve some time.
Will the look into the DV and the drug issues only happen if he signed, or at some point does that happen so that people have a clearer picture whether they want to sign him or not?
Oh, I think the league has already done some research into it. But what typically happens is behind the scenes, teams will ask the league, look, what are we talking about here? Is he subject to certain things? The league might not tell you, you know, a specific number of games, but the league can tell you whether or not a player is subject to A, investigation, and B, possible suspension. And so I would believe that that's what teams that are interested would do.
From what you hear, is there any buzz in bringing back Colin Kaepernick as a football player? Well, obviously, they bring him back, he's not going to be management. But as a football player, is there anything on the cap front?
I've not heard anything.
Why do you think that is? The obvious?
I think there are two trains of thought. I think there's the obvious, and I think there are also some teams that just feel like he's not a good fit in terms of football. And then there are others that say that the film on him, despite what the numbers may say, is not very good. So different teams and different personnel people have different reasons for how they feel about Colin. And it's unfortunate that we've gotten to the point that, you know, we're painting with a very broad brush here. But at this point, I've not heard anything about anyone stepping up and being willing to bring him in at this point.
What do you think when you hear that the film just isn't good?
I think different personnel people see different things. You know, do I think he is... There was one point last year where I think I looked it up, and there were 121 quarterbacks in camp, during training camp. And I asked a simple question, are there 121 quarterbacks better than Colin Kaepernick? And the answer is clearly no.
Right.
So there's clearly a lot going on. So does Colin Kaepernick have the ability to be an NFL quarterback and be on a roster? Yes. Should he be? That's a totally another discussion. But again, different people have different reasons for why he is not on a roster.
Is that film that you're talking about, the 5 minutes before the game when he's
no.
taking a knee? It's just
no.
It's just so bizarre to me. Either way, are you surprised that somebody hasn't at least thought about signing him to prevent the undoubtedly, you know, years long of lawsuits that we might see about collusion and that sort of thing, that somebody doesn't say, hey, can somebody just sign this guy so we can kind of prevent that?
Not really. I think, you know, Seattle brought him in last year, was the only team to bring him in for an interview. That did not go well, from my understanding. And so I'm not surprised by that. You know, look, people around the league talk, and it happens really quickly in terms of guys get labeled one way or another. And what's happened to Colin, I think, is unfair. I think it's wrong. I think he deserves to be in the league. But again, you're asking me, why isn't he in the league? And there are multiple layers to that. It's not just the protesting.
Do Jim, let's close on this. Jim Trotter's with us, NFL Network. We appreciate it all the time. You have a speaking engagement coming up this Friday?
San Diego. We're our local chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists. We have a scholarship reception every year, and we give out some money to local aspiring journalists, and this Friday we'll be doing it again. So, journalists are coming under fire, particularly with this administration, so it's important. I don't think it's ever been more important to have, quality young journalists coming up and understanding, the responsibility that they have in this field and whatnot. So it's always a fun night and a good night. I'm looking forward to it.
One last point on this. I saw that you had retweeted a note from the LA Times and their union election, and you just mentioned journalism coming under fire recently. What do you see happening in terms of funding, and especially funding for investigative journalism at local newspapers?
Man, that's a question that could go a lot of different directions and take a lot of time. Yeah. I'll just say this to you. When I got into journalism, there were you had more papers that were family-owned, and because of that, it seemed like it was more about the journalism than it was about the bottom line. And today, I see it being the other way around. I see it being more about the bottom line than about the journalism in many cases. And that's really unfortunate to me, because if you look around the country, you see lots of quality journalists who are being laid off through no fault of their own. Their work is exemplary. But because different organizations or companies want a higher profit margin, they're laying these people off. And I just think that's unfortunate. That's why when I got into the business, I always thought of journalism as a career, meaning you do good work, you work hard, you're always going to have a job. And now I think journalism, to me at least, is more of a job, because it doesn't matter if you do good work, it doesn't matter if you work hard. There are still factors beyond your control that may say, you know what, sorry, you're unemployed now. And to me, that's a tragedy.
It sucks. It sucks for many reasons. Like you said, we could do hours on this. Jim, we appreciate a couple minutes. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Jim Trotter, longtime NFL writer, @Jim_NFL.